Angeles. It's 7:01 and you're listening to CFRC, another radio station. I was someplace else. CFRC, and we're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. It's 7:02 now, Doug. Oh, we got to turn you on. Shoot.
We're turned on now. There you go. 7:01.
Two.
Oh, I'm just taking you back in time.
And that was...
It's time after time.
I
careful.
I know. I got all stuck there. That was...
Alisa P.
Alisa P. And that was her cover in Inuktitut of Time After Time. The Cyndi Lauper hit. Probably my favorite song ever. You?
I love that song, actually.
Good
honestly,
for you.
Feels like something that would play at prom in 1984.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't ask him how old he was then, okay? No. Don't go there.
I wasn't that old. but I told you I played that because she is going to be here in Kingston.
That's right.
At the Grand.
Is that right? When?
Lisa. November.
Oh, wow.
I want to say the 18th. But I'm not. I'll look it up.
Yes, please. I'm interested. That'd be really good if we can get her to come to CFRC.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah.
Hi.
That would be phenomenal.
So if she does come in, are you interested in coming back to not to shadow, but as programmers?
I would love to. Yeah, yeah. That's great.
Good. We'll turn you loose interviewing her. Yeah, each of you have different kind of questions you can ask.
Oh, sorry,
her.
It was the 7th.
7th.
November
the 7th.
7th.
Oh, wow. That's not far away.
It's coming up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's like next week.
Yes.
Next Friday. Like not this one where the,
Halloween is Friday, so the following Halloween.
Speaking of which, have you noticed this, like you two?
Yeah.
And Douglas. This is a little question. Like last Saturday... For me, not probably for you, I was out, we were out, and there was a number of, gremlins, like, out walking around like it was Halloween. Like, it's not Halloween yet.
Is this the purple people?
No. They were all different kind of people. Kids out in their costumes. Celebrating Halloween.
Oh, that's interesting.
But, like there was like all the downtown area, Belleville. These kids all dressed up. And adults, some adults too. I couldn't wrap my brain around it. Did that happen here?
Nothing that's that I saw.
For you too. And then I went to the Plaza. They call it the mall now. But in my day, it was the Plaza. And it was full of like kids in their, costumes.
Hmm.
Like a week early. When did this become a thing?
I don't know. Never heard of it.
I think it's all lost on you. Like thousands, or hundreds anyways. Of kids up and down looking for candy at all the different stores and storefronts.
If you look at the weather report for this week, there's a good chance it would be pouring rain.
It's better
you had those kids not getting those costumes wet.
Die hard Halloweeners. Go out when it's raining.
I agree.
Exactly. Yeah. I think I've gone out when it's snowed, it's rained, all the weather. Yeah.
I remember snowing. Like it was snow. You go out in the snowsuit.
Yeah. And your mom would make you wear a coat over your costume.
Yeah. It was about, I'm Batman or whatever. And But these ones that they're raising now, like any kind of, it's going to rain out. I will stay inside.
That's because the kids have been watching The Wizard of Oz.
No, it is not, Doug.
One of those characters found water really difficult to deal with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one. You know, I never really liked that movie. Like, people are like, have you ever seen that? Like, yeah, I didn't like it. Mm. Anyways, I digress. What is her name? Ella Sappi?
Elisa P.
Elisa P. Mm-hmm. Going to be up here in Kingston. She's got the category Pop, Roots, and World.
Wow.
All of them. And she'll be playing at the Grand Theater, the Rosin Auditorium. Mm-hmm. Which one's that?
It's the new one that was added on.
Added on where?
Yeah, it's the main one.
It's like...
It's a Rosin...
It's the one.
Yeah.
Like you go into the Kingston Grand.
It's the same place you...
It's this one.
That's right. It's not the Baby Grand. It's the big theater.
Well, why do they got to confuse things?
Well, when you go to buy your ticket, you don't want to say the auditorium.
You're not. You're saying the Kingston Grand Theater.
There you go. And they have several theaters. It's huge.
Come There's on. Only the one.
Oh, no.
Right? Like when you go in mm-hmm. to the Grand, you walk in, you tell the ticket lady, and then you walk around. Uh-huh. You go through those doors, and the people, they take your ticket.
And there you are, big stage.
That's the Kingston Grand.
You've been on that stage, haven't you?
But why do they call it the Rosin?
The sponsorship.
Oh, I see. There's money involved. All right, then.
Well, hey, wait a minute. Don't say it that way, because the community of Duck Lake, Saskatchewan, you know your history. 1885?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Back then.
A rebellion out western Canada, and they had to send in the RCMP and then the Canadian military into the community. Well, the town of Duck Lake has the rights to their town's name available. So they've got people who are saying that if the four of us want to put in a couple million dollars, upwards of $10 million in total, we're going to need a good lawyer to deal with this one. But we have the right to use the name Duck Lake as a town. Now, why are they doing that? They need money. But it's like what you just said. It's a grand theater. Everybody knows that.
Okay.
As opposed to the Baby Grand, which is the smaller one.
But then they would have said the Baby Grand Theater.
There you go.
But this is the Kingston Grand Theater.
It's like the Isabel Bader. They have a big theater.
No, that's the Isabel Bader.
But they have several theaters there. You've been in three of them there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sean's really quiet about all of this, isn't he? He's been at all these theaters. Yeah.
I get around.
You have. Yeah. Anyway, anything else, Sean, that you have?
No, that's
no.
That.
Okay, Madeline, we're going to do a song that you have set up there. Who is it?
Yeah, this is Amanda Ramey and Live at the Woodshed.
It's number 44. It's called Live at the Woodshed, and it's about a person who was taken away to a residential school many years ago, and number 44 was the man's number instead of his name.
Right.
And she the woodshed is a theater location that Amanda Reom and Shoshana Kish have put together for musicians to go and play, and they set up their own production company for musicians. So yeah, this is pretty good.
All right,
brand new music to CFRC.
About 1956, that's when I first entered the residential school. I was born in 1951. Number 44 was my name. That's how I was addressed to. I didn't know my name much as Robert while I was in the residential school. Everything was numbered, your hat, your jacket, your mitts, your shoes, your pants, your shirt. It was all number 44. Our bed was number 44. Where we sat was number 44. Our sheets, our towels were numbered, our toothbrush was numbered, and our glass was numbered. Everybody was a number. We were like little rabbits. We knew exactly where to go. We knew exactly what to do.
In
Okay, Sean, how are you doing?
Oh, all right, Doug.
Yeah. I'm not going to ask how the other two are doing. I can see big smiles, so it's okay.
Are they?
We have a really quick...
Well, we can ask them. How are you doing?
I'm doing amazing. Thank you for asking.
Doing good. Thank you.
Cool.
And on that note, we only have a couple of minutes.
Really?
Yeah, because we have an interview coming up in a little while.
Oh, nice.
So,
really? Good.
So,
yeah, let me take it away. So I'm going to introduce Tribes. It's more than a band. It's a coalition of experience, heritage, and conviction, comprised of Juno Award-winning vocalist Earl Star Francis, Six Nations Tuscaro guitarist Earl Johnson, Mohawk bassist Donnie Hill, and Hamilton drummer Dave Davidson. The group has over four decades each of live music, unified under a mission of peace, love, and empowerment. Save the World carries both urgency and uplift. Save the World, Let's Save the World for the Children. The chorus insists, sung over modern reggae with an R&B feel and a reggaetation intro. The song is described by the band as a statement of global crisis. War in the Middle East, conflict in Ukraine, and the displacement of indigenous people worldwide. Yet is it also deeply personal. Francis reflects, I do have some grandkids, and I am wondering, what kind of world are they going to be in if we don't start to turn some of this around? The track was born from guitarist Johnson's initial lyrics, fleshed out collectively by the band. Donnie Hill describes it as both message and method. Maybe we can show other people through music. It's nice to show that we can come together no matter our lineage is and hopefully put out something positive. Recorded with community contributions, the single includes a children's choir and features Candy Barotti on vocals, John Baird on keyboard, and Isaac Inja on horns. The intergenerational collaboration amplifies the message of legacy and responsibility, embedding hope in the very structure of the song. Take it away.
my name is Genevieve, and I'll be hosting Peace, Love, and Jenny on CFRC 101.9 FM on Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. We'll be exploring everything from pop and soul to funk, jazz, and even a touch of hip-hop. Music that spans decades but all connects through good vibes, peace and love, and of course, a little bit of me, Jenny. See you there!
My name is Stephen Brooks. I'm an emergency doctor and researcher in the Faculty of Health Sciences at Queen's University. Out-of-hospital cardiac arrest affects about 35,000 people across Canada every year. The sooner treatment begins, the higher the probability of recovery. Neighbors Saving Neighbors is a pilot program to improve survival for people who experience sudden cardiac arrest in Frontenac County. Let us teach you how to do CPR, use an AED, and become a lifesaver. Consider becoming a Neighbors Saving Neighbors volunteer.
Apply today at frontenacparamedics.ca.
Greetings and a warm welcome to the Pantheon. I'm your host, Madeline. The Pantheon is an auditory feast where you're expected to leave any and all reservations at the door. We will explore a different theme each week based on concepts found in literature, music, and mythology. So for those seeking an adventure, tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM on Thursdays at 8 p.m., and I'll see you there.
Your library, your story. At the Kingston Frontenac Public Library, books are just the beginning. A library card starts a lifelong adventure, connecting you to everything you need to inspire learning, creativity, and fun. With 16 locations and plenty of online services, using your library has never been easier. Study in a quiet space, meet friends and learn new things, or explore the world through a magazine or a museum pass. Become a part of our story. Visit your local library branch or find us online at kfpl.ca.
I have a very special guest here at Aboriginal Voices, and Sarah Roney. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Good. We're looking at a very special day because your specialty is you're a dietitian, but your specialty is looking at people who really need to change their food intake. You had me going through, planning guides and fats that I eat, the carbohydrates I get, sugar, we'll get into that later, and sodium. And I listen and I've been through that before, so yeah, I can change. The hardest part is actually doing the changes. there's a lot of things that we at home have done, to prepare our food for, the freezer. So we got fresh vegetables and fresh fruit, prepare it for the freezer so that we have right into the late fall. We have what we know as fresh foods. But, there are a couple of things that you're going to talk about over the next few weeks with us here on Aboriginal Voices, and it's going to be how to really balance what I'm learning about all these numbers that you throw at us, all of the, reading labels. That's fun. I really mean it honestly. It's fun. I'm reading more labels now, but everybody around me is reading the labels. You can't have any of this. You can have more of that. How to make food taste good, how to store food, all those kinds of things. So we're going to turn it over to you. This is going to be an Aboriginal Voices special on food security. And Sarah, we're relying on your guidance. And hopefully people will be able to write in to aboriginalvoices@cfrc.ca, or they can drop us a line here at CFRC and we'll get back to you and ask you and say, oh, here's another question that has come up. Your all set to go. I can see everything ready. The only thing is that we didn't bring in all the food that we're supposed to be eating right now, but we'll get to that later. There'll be a big feast later on. We're going to do all of the last day of October in 2023 and all of November. We're going to be looking at food security and looking and digging in deep into each week. So this is the overview, and we're all set. We only have 2 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't have to use all 2 hours, but we'll be happy to take what you would like to do. So, Sarah, welcome to Aboriginal Voices.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me again. So I work a lot with chronic disease prevention and management for folks who have diabetes and cardiovascular disease and or risk factors for both. So you touched on some great points, because a lot of times we kind of know maybe what we should be eating, and that's a huge part of it. But the other side is how to actually implement all of that information and knowledge. The healthy eating principles that we're all sort of familiar with are fairly straightforward and simple, but there's a huge body of research that goes behind why all of those recommendations are in place. And that's why I fell in love with nutrition. I always loved eating, but it was when I started learning about the reasons why certain foods are so good for us that I pursued a career in nutrition. And it wasn't because I loved cooking. And that's a struggle for a lot of people, is finding the balance between knowing what we should be doing, knowing what foods we like, but then preparing them as well. And then talking about food security in general, that transcends a lot of different categories, as much as what our food environment looks like, what food is available to us, what foods are a part of our culture and acceptable to us, as well as can we prepare those types of things, do we know how to prepare them, and do we have the resources available to actually do that preparation. And so we're going to be talking a lot about the new Canada's Food Guide, and I say it's new, but it's now been around since 2019. When it got its facelift. And the big difference between this guideline or guide and what we had historically is there's more of an emphasis on all of the other factors that influence our food choices, more than just what we should be eating in the portions. So it talks a lot about mindfulness of our eating habits, and it really encourages cooking more often and cooking with family members, mm-hmm. and engaging the whole family. It talks a lot about food enjoyment, and sharing food and cultural traditions and things like that. So that's a huge difference between our guidelines before and then these current ones.
I love the idea that it's not just one person doing all the cooking.
Mm-hmm.
It's everybody involved in doing the cooking, but also the planning ahead, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's often the challenge, isn't it?
Yeah.
What absolutely. Do I have in my pantry?
Mm-hmm.
And what can we prepare?
Yeah, and so many times we go to grocery stores, or we get food from food banks and things like that, and how much of that do we end up using versus how much of it actually gets thrown out or wasted? And so having good food skills is the ability to do some planning ahead, potentially, hopefully, but then having the ability to adapt recipes to what you have available to you. And making sure we're using all of the produce that we buy and things like that.
And so one of the problems that I've been seeing is that the people are saying, oh, I have to go to the store to get my food. So there are a number of people who listen to Aboriginal Voices who are rural or remote, and they going to the store often is not as convenient as it could be in big major cities or smaller cities. So this guide idea is now going to be looking at something slightly different, is it?
Mm-hmm. So on the Health Canada website under the food guide. So it's canada.ca/food guide. There's a number of resources, more on how to prepare foods and how to plan and how to budget and things like that in this website, which can help when there's other factors that influence how often we can run to the store, so to speak. So, you know, a lot of people on fixed income, they grocery shop once a month. And how do you plan for an entire month and things like that? Or it's a big deal to go to a bigger grocery center and things like that. Yeah.
It could be overwhelming, too.
Yeah, right? Definitely overwhelming. If you're,
well, I would prefer going once a month. But that's okay.
Sometimes I wish I could only go once a month, but yeah.
But you know, I live in a rural setting, and you know, so we have to travel to whatever it is we're going to get. So we go and get milk at a creamery, and we go and get the fruits and vegetables in season at farms.
Yeah,
and it used to be you could go. Pre-pandemic, we could actually go and pick or collect. You know, if you wanted to get potatoes, you could go dig them out yourself. Mm-hmm. Now you can't do that. And the farmers have all gone to get it ready, put it in little baskets, and they have it available like a stand at the end of the lane when you're in a barn. But I'm also looking at part of doing that. For example, when I went with my granddaughter when she was five, she would pick one and put it in the basket and pick two, three, put them in her mouth and eat them, and then one in the basket. And after about 20 minutes, her comment was, "Boy, getting food is really hard work." So that's one of the fun things, that a good memory about getting your foods. But coming home, and I know that, yes, we'll get, you know, 6 or 8 4-liter baskets of strawberries. I know I'm going to have to process them when I get them home because they don't wait.
Yes. You know? They get used up quick.
It would be a whole day's event. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we were asked when we were talking planning, organizing the food security show, that, you know, maybe you could talk to us a little bit about that. And I see in the food guide, it's also part of that, you know, cultural aspects of the food in the community.
Well, I mean, as you were talking, you're talking about getting food from the farm, which I love. And there were a few in the City of Kingston initiatives. The Good Food Box is one of them, where it's sourcing seasonal produce from local farms, and then people can subscribe and get a food basket, which is great because it's lower cost fresh produce. But it's then the other side of it is knowing how to prepare or how to store that food. So there are some resources on this Canada Food Guide website, which is very helpful. But that's a whole other side of it. There's another website. It's the Foodland Ontario website, so not the grocery store Foodland. But Foodland Ontario, and it allows you to search for recipes based on what's in season, too, which is really interesting and helpful for fresh ideas.
And especially for people who live in the boreal forest, for example.
Yeah.
Food in season may mean very limited, you know, for example, some people collect wild rice, but that only comes once a year.
Yeah.
And so you have to know how to collect it, how to clean it, and then store it so that you have it all year long.
Yeah.
And there are people to teach that.
Yeah.
But if you live, we're losing much of the farmland around the Golden Horseshoe, but, you know, if you're in the, you know, Grimsby to Niagara-on-the-Lake area, there, there used to be all kinds of places you can go from season to season, strawberry season to raspberries, and then you get into peaches and cherries and pears, and they're all very close by.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually go and pick them yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's only for a small group of people.
Yeah.
Several million, but it's a small group of people, because when you look at the rest of Canada, there's all the areas, like Ottawa has the Ottawa Valley, but their growing is more farms that produce milk or sheep or dairy, beef cattle.
Yeah.
And not as much in the way of, well, there are some places where you can get the vegetables as
mm-hmm.
well.
Yep.
So what can people do if they live rural and remote in the Canadian Shield?
Great question. So if you have access to fresh foods or farms or big gardens and you can produce your own, wonderful, mm-hmm. and then storing it with, whether it's freezing or canning, is helpful. If you don't have those skills or that access, we have to rely on processed foods, whether it's something that's been frozen, which is a very healthy way of storing food. Usually there's nothing added to it when we talk about vegetables and fruits and things like that. And then there's canning, which when we think of canning, usually people know that means added sodium or salt. So there are more and more no salt added canned vegetables and things like that available. And that's a regulated term. If something says no salt added to it, that means very minimal salt is in that food item. So choosing that is wonderful. terms like lower in sodium doesn't necessarily mean it's very low in sodium. But typically these foods come at a little bit of a higher cost for most canned items. It's maybe 50 cents more. So it's not too bad. But some grocery stores don't carry these mm-hmm. options. So I live outside of Kingston as well. And the two grocery stores that are close, you can't find no salt added canned vegetables.
You can't find it at all.
No, they aren't there. Maybe for a couple select things, but what I'm typically buying is like beans and legumes and lentils, and they don't have no salt added versions. So when we think about like our nutrition messaging and things like that, and we're like, oh yeah, it's fine, just get the no salt added. Sometimes they're hard to find in these, more rural or northern areas. But rinsing even the ones that have salt added to them can help reduce the sodium. So that's good.
Okay. And actually, it's funny because yesterday I was sent to pick up soup stock.
Yeah.
And for a friend who's coming over who is vegan.
Mm-hmm.
So vegetable soup stock. And one brand said low sodium.
Yeah.
And I turned and looked at it, and in a serving, which is less than a cup, it was 800.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what I said. I put it back on the shelf and thought there's something wrong with the label or the data that they're giving me. So I looked at another one, which is a no-name brand.
Yeah.
And it had only 710.
Yeah.
But it didn't say no salt added or anything, mm-hmm. so... I'm thinking, wow, yeah, better off to go buy the chicken, cook the chicken, make our own stock. But that's another issue that we'll talk about later.
For sure.
That's interesting. So how often do you think people are going to be looking at the labels truthfully, other than the people that come to your clinic because they're like me, something drastic happened and I get to go and meet you and I hear all the things and they all make sense to me and they're not new, and it's just I probably had slipped from following all these guides.
Yeah, so I don't know how many people are really looking at that nutrition information unless they've had something health-related happen, and now there's a reason to. But when you were talking at the beginning, you said, I think it's fun to look at all these food labels, which is wonderful, because a lot of people get very frustrated mm-hmm. by them, because there's a ton of information, and trying to make the healthy choice can be daunting, mm-hmm. to say the least. So navigating that food label is very important. And when I say food label, I'm referring to that nutrition facts panel that's usually on the back or the side of a product packaging.
It's in black and white on all of them. I noticed that. That was the other
black
thing.
And white.
They're not trying to hide it. It's right there, black and white.
On the front of packages, there's lots of food advertising and marketing and terminology that's used to try to grab your attention. And there's a lot of money that goes into product placement and mm-hmm. things like that, and food marketing. So lots of words on things that try to grab your attention. Any health or nutrient content claims like low in sodium, high in fiber, they are protected. You can't just willy-nilly put anything on your food label in Canada. Other things, you know, when there's food trends and things, companies will just put labels on foods. For example, the gluten-free trend, where gluten's a protein that's naturally found in grain products like wheat. And you'll see yogurt that's labeled gluten-free. Well, there was never any naturally present mm-hmm. gluten in there to begin with, but now they're slapping that label on it just so that people want
people will buy it.
To grab it. Yeah, so there's lots of information on those, and I try to tell people not to get too distracted by it, because it's the Nutrition Facts Panel that is our most unbiased source of nutrition information.
Oh, okay. And so that little black and white label.
Yeah.
Then look at that first.
Yeah.
And start with portion size.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that shocked me with the soup I was just telling you about.
Mm-hmm.
One was less than a cup and the other one was a cup.
Yeah.
Now, whose cup are they using? I don't know. I assume a cup is, you know, well, 250 milliliters or something close to that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's usually two measurements on that. So right under the black letters that say nutrition facts, there will be a serving size. And it'll usually say one cup and then another measurement, like 250 mils, for example, or sometimes it's in grams. And then that's what all that other information, all the nutrition information, is based off of, that portion. So comparing that to what you would actually eat mm-hmm. is important. And then also making sure you're looking at that, because if you pick up another soup can, for example, and one's for half of a cup and one's for the whole can, you may just infer incorrect mm-hmm. information from that.
But that you just sparked something for me, though, that if I'm canning my own vegetables, for mm-hmm. example, how do I test to know how much sodium might be in what I'm putting, where I'm thinking, oh, this is great because I'm doing all the work and I've taking them out of my garden or a local garden?
Yeah.
So how do I know I don't have way too much sodium in
Great
it?
Great question. So there might be a listener out there that has more experience canning than I do, which is very mm-hmm. little. But essentially, each teaspoon of salt that we put into something. Now I'm going to just check my notes here to make sure that I'm not giving you incorrect information. Each teaspoon do I have it on here? I don't think I have it on here. I think, and I could be wrong when I say this, but a teaspoon of salt contains around 2,400 milligrams of sodium. And we consider a low sodium diet 2,000 milligrams or less. We only really need around 1,500 for essential body functions that use sodium. So if we're putting one teaspoon in, and that's going to be divided over several meals, maybe, it might not be a big deal. But mm-hmm. if that's one teaspoon going into something that's going to be divided by two servings, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that gives me a way to sort of guide me as I'm going to test it. Yeah, this is all new because we make our own yogurt, and then we start changing things. You know, like taking some of the whey out of it, so it's thicker. And now, how do I decide how the yogurt is going to be measured for all the nutrients that are in it? And anyway, but now you've given me one for canning.
Yeah.
The other one is making jam.
yes.
We'll talk about sugar another show, okay? But making jams, and, you know, that takes me back to being a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because we made jams and then we'd had them all winter long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea how much sugar, well, I do know how much sugar's
lots
in it,
of
but
sugar goes
I don't
into
know
jam.
How much is in a spoonful of sugar.
On average, about 15 grams in a tablespoon of jam.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I better go back.
Yeah.
And check. I'll eat what's in one of the jars.
Yeah.
And then we'll see how wired I am.
Yeah.
No, we won't do that. Okay, so the food guide. Now, I think that the food guide that you were looking up as well had them in different languages. I don't know. Did you check
that out? Yeah, there's a number of different languages available for the snapshot of the food guide, which is very helpful, for sure.
I noticed you printed out the one that you're comfortable with in English. But I also know that it's in Ojibwe and Mohawk and a number. There looked to me like there were about 50 or 60 different indigenous languages from across Canada right there on the site. I'm not going to ask you to try and figure out all of them, but I know you can drop down how you want to see it.
Yes.
And it's exactly the same sort of PDF page, except that it's been translated.
Yeah.
I really applaud the folks who are running this in the Government of Canada for doing that, because there are communities, you know, like the Dene in Northwest Territories or northern part of Alberta, there are people there who could now look at the guide, but in Dene or Ojibwe communities. And I know two communities that are using it with young children at school, teaching them to create good snacks from the guide. But they're doing it in Ojibwe, and they've got this resource from the Government of Canada. So it's like a big body is saying, a government body saying, this is important, and we're going to get it so that you can read it or you can share it with the people in your community, or you can use it as a learning tool more than just food. So big shout out for the Government of Canada on that one. Whoever was behind that, that's who we're shouting out. I look at the plate too. And I think it was about 4 weeks ago when you first introduced it at the session that I was at, the rehab session that I went to. And it was really interesting because I now look at my plate when I go home.
Yeah.
Not to take anything off, but just to see how it was set up on my plate. Not as perfect as the ones we see in the pictures, okay?
Yeah.
But at least it gives me an opportunity to look and say, how big is that portion supposed to be?
Mm-hmm.
And I hear Mary all the time. Years ago, she would say, you know, that the portion of meat you need is only about the size of a deck of cards. And then she came out with this deck of cards that was so tiny, it would be like a cube, a little cube, you know, you would use for building blocks. So a deck of cards could be all kinds of sizes. You got to be careful.
For sure.
You even said that when you held up, okay, here's one sample and here's another sample. You add them. I think they're molded plastic or something.
Yeah, I have some plastic food models.
But it's a good way for those of us who are listening to you talk about the food guide. This is what you should have.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I really like about this new food guide is it's using the balanced plate model to kind of highlight what portions should look like. So it's one plate, half of it's our vegetables and fruits, a quarter of it is protein food sources. So we previously called this group meats and alternatives. But we've lumped dairy in there now as a protein source. And then the last quarter is our grains and starches. Okay, or whole grains is what we're encouraging more of. And if we can kind of balance our meals in this way, we're checking all the boxes for the types of nutrients that we need. Because typically, vegetables don't make up half of people's plates. And that's one of the things I really like about this newer way of presenting nutrition information versus our older way, which is really focused on a portion is this, a portion is this, which for some people, they love that level of direction. But for a lot of people, it was overwhelming to try to apply that to every day. Okay, so with this balanced plate, it's like, okay, every meal we need something that gives us protein, something that gives us a grain or a starch, and some fruit or vegetable. And hopefully half of our plate is vegetables and fruit. Which we can talk about the fruit portions when we talk about sugar and things like that.
Oh, darn. I was trying to not say anything. Yeah, yeah, that we will do that. We have a special show about sugar that you're going to help us with.
Yeah.
Okay, so where can I find the food guide again?
So it's canada.ca/food guide.
Oh, okay.
Or just put Canada's food guide into your search browser.
And it should come up as Canada's food guide.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you said it was 2019 when it was published.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just at the beginning of a pandemic.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people actually did see it.
I know. We had there was a lot of excitement when it was first released. And then it really, the priorities all focused,
changed
for everybody. The focus changed for sure. So, yeah. And there's a lot more to the website now than when it was first released. So if you kind of poked around back in 2019, pre-pandemic, go check it out again, because there's a lot more resources available on that website, too.
And you said there were some recipes on it?
Yeah. And what I really love about the recipes is, because the theme is to engage the whole household, the whole family on food preparation and food choices and things like that. In each recipe, there's tips for how to engage younger chefs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
So kids and things like that, which is really helpful, because it's such an important age to get kids interested in food and cooking. But it's hard for parents who are busy to know how to safely allow them to help. But the more kids are involved, the more likely they'll try more foods, which just helps build healthy eaters for life.
And I know a number of people in rural and remote areas that have wood stoves for cooking on. So there's another opportunity for not just food and food safety, but also, you know, care and safety in and around the home. Yeah,
absolutely.
Especially with wood stoves.
Yeah. You
know, or wood ovens and that sort of thing. Yeah, this is fantastic. Sarah, we're looking at all of these items for our listeners right now, and you know we're going to be talking more about it each month or each week in November, and I'm just thinking, how can people go to get more resources or get help if they get stuck with questions that come up from this? They can write to us at aboriginalvoices@cfrc.ca. But is there another resource within the community, like a health unit or something?
Yeah, any local health unit, they will have their own, like, lots of different resources. Some of them have nutrition classes or, I don't want to say cooking classes, because they don't all have cooking classes,
right.
But there's definitely going to be resources at your health unit. There's another great website that I would love to direct people to, and it's unlockfood.ca. So unlockfood.ca. And that website is published by, it was originally published by Dietitians of Canada. I'm not 100% sure if they're still the ones funding it. But there's lots of information. Basically, any topic you can search and you'll get information on that as well. And then I'll probably get this slightly wrong, but telehealth typically has nutrition resources. Or if you have nutrition questions, you can direct them there as well.
And that could be online. You just phone them.
Tell them. Yeah, you can just phone them. Yeah.
And,
so if
and
you
tell
don't
them
have...
non-emergency.
Yeah.
So that's fabulous. Great resources for us, Sarah. Thank you very much for this conversation today. And I'm going to leave the last word to you. What would you advise people who are just getting started looking at this food guide and looking at getting their family together to say, let's make meals together?
Yeah, I think my number one advice is to get other members of the household picking meals. And so if you go just to that food guide snapshot, having family members pick, you know, a protein source, a grain, or a fruit or vegetable to go with that meal, and then that takes the burden off whoever's been doing all the meal planning, shopping, and cooking, and it gets eaters engaged, because I know lots of people make multiple meals for their households, which can be very draining. And then the other thing is just trying to prepare more foods from home as well. So less fast food, processed food, and things like that, but I'm sure we'll get into that another week.
So Sarah Rooney, and where do you work?
I work at Kingston Health Sciences Center at the Hotel Dew Hospital site in the cardiac rehab and diabetes management programs.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm James Abrams.
And I'm John Abrams.
And we're the Abrams Brothers.